Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 15th day of November. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In Chicago today, futures finished lower on both the corn and the wheat, down 4 to 5 cents. The soybeans were up a penny. Mike Zuzulo is now here. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. What'd you see in the marketplace today?
Well, I don't have a lot of confidence in the soybeans after this week, even though they put on the best show in the later part of the week, thanks in part to some really strong weekly export sales in both beans and meal. In the stock market, making new record highs, the crude oil up 1.5% to 2%, both of those features on improving expectations by the market about the U.S.-China trade negotiations and phase one finally getting wrapped up. But the reason for my concern with the soybeans, Todd, is that we had a lot of good news in the form of lower Argentine wheat supplies, lower Australian wheat supplies, a heavy freeze in hard red wheat country. We had corn ethanol stocks down at the lowest level since September of 2017, and yet we've got a 7-week low in the corn, being drugged down once again by, you guessed it, wheat and to a lesser degree, copper. So this market has got a lot of questions to answer in my mind, and don't like the fact that beans were the leader to the upside.
Why is the market heavy?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we have not been able to shake off, and we saw this on Tuesday, we saw a really strong weather-related, wheat-led, supply-related short covering move in the grains. Beans played along with the wheat and corn rally, but then that automatically reversed thrusters on Wednesday when impeachment, Hong Kong, and macro-related liquidation by longs took over. And to me, I'm wondering whether if we just didn't trade positions between the long on Tuesday and the short on Wednesday. And so what that says to me, or suggests pretty strongly to me, is that we're not finding the support on what really matters, the long-term fact that USDA cut the corn stocks, the long-term fact that wheat supplies globally are going down, the long-term fact that here in Atchison, Kansas, as harvest is wrapping up on fairly decent, very, in some cases, very good yields for corn, we are at essentially a plus one basis right now, having moved up about 7 cents in the last week. So you've got a lot of real fundamentals out there that would suggest wheat and corn should be leading the market higher. And I think what it really boils down to is the lack of USMCA, the impeachment hearings. We just don't have the big money in this market yet.
Has the money moved then to New York?
I think so. I think that's exactly what's happened. If I had to guess, is that we are buying equities and selling commodities, and the serious fund money is still on the sidelines. In point of fact, I'll be real interested to see what the commitment of traders numbers look like in both wheat and in copper this week, because those were the two that made sense. They both tended to move back and forth with one another, and copper tended to lead wheat again. And that says to me that maybe that's the footprint of the funds.
How do you view the longer haul?
Yeah, I mean, bottom lining it out, the best production and the best producers I have in Illinois are coming in about 25 bushels below in corn, wrapping up corn harvest, coming in about 25 bushels below what they did in those big crop years. They're well above their five-year average, but it's not nearly as big around the country as what it has been. And so if you look at USDA's yield number, it's down about 5.5% versus 2018. I think it should be down closer to 10%. So I'm still in the camp of a 165 yield or harvested acres closer to 80 million. We've got four states right now, Michigan, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin, that are anywhere from 15% to 39% harvested. Clients in Ohio, clients in Minnesota, clients in the Dakotas, even some clients in northeastern Iowa, not able to get nearly as much done as they need to because of both weather and propane issues. So I think you still have a supply cut. So to answer your question, what's that mean in the long term? Eventually, I still see the corn as a better commodity to hold and store, especially given the futures in beans, especially given some of these basis levels that I'm hearing about around the country.
Do you think producers should put corn across the scale on a basis contract?
Yeah, if you can't dry it and you can't store it, yes. I think basis contracts at 20, 30, 40, 50 over in your neck of the woods is not a bad idea. And I'd even say out here in this part of the country at a plus one, that's extremely good compared to a 50 under when a couple years ago when we had a really big crop out here. So between that and the idea of buying back corn with some March options, I think that's a good idea, generally speaking. I'd be more concerned about dumping out of the beans if we didn't see the corn and wheat recover pretty quickly next week, because the weather looks like it's going to be wet the last 10 days of November. I would think that would have some play in the markets after Monday's harvest numbers come out.
Should the bin door stay shut for on-farm storage?
At this point, yes. I mean, unless we don't get the phase one trade deal and those December 15 tariffs go into effect, then that gets really tough as far as wanting to store anything if we go down that. That, to me, is kind of the nuclear option if those December 15 tariffs get put into place by the United States, because those are the softwares, that's the gaming systems, the laptops, the cell phones. That's what makes and breaks the U.S. and Chinese economy. And if we go down that path, I'm fearful that both sides will walk away from negotiations. But if that doesn't happen, I do think it's still a good place to store corn if you've got the bin space.
You have a great weekend, Mike.
You too. Safe travels, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo at globalanalytics.biz. Eric Snodgrass is now here from Nutrien Ag Solutions. Eric, tell me what you've been finding.
Well, Todd, at least we have some good news to start off talking about today, and that is the fact that we're on a bit of a warming trend here with our temperature patterns. After seeing record low temperatures over the last week where we actually spent some time below 0 degrees Fahrenheit, which is incredibly cold, even by mid-February standards, well, the pattern has since relaxed and things are changing to be much more favorable for, I think, hopefully getting some field work in. Problem is we still have some snow on the ground and we got to melt that snow away, which means as the temperatures do slowly rebound, things will be a bit soggy here in the near term. But when I look out over the next 5 to 7 days, I basically see one shot at us getting some precip through much of the Corn Belt, and that's really going to be coming through late in the night on Saturday, but through the day on Sunday, such that maybe getting over toward Illinois by maybe Sunday evening. What I'm watching is there's a weak little low pressure system that's moving through the North Central Plains, and as it does so, it's really going to be starved for moisture, but it's going to try to put down some precip that may stretch from, you know, parts of the Dakotas over toward Minnesota, Wisconsin, and then south through Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, even parts of Nebraska and Kansas, and it'll slowly move toward the Great Lakes states, but this is not a big precipitation maker. So when we think about where we go from there as this pattern does slowly relax, we have to turn our attention to the West Coast. And on the West Coast right now, we're watching a very interesting set of events unfold once we get out past the middle of next week. Now, we've been tucked away in a pattern that has featured a big split flow over the West that's got us into a ridge that goes into the Gulf of Alaska with a trough that's to the south of it. And that block in the flow has allowed so much cold air to come across the eastern part of the U.S. Well, we're seeing that pattern tighten up a bit over the West, and we're going to make a much smaller wave break in a ridge that's going to go over the northwest middle of the next week. And what is that going to do? Well, that's going to put a trough over Southern California. It may bring the first precipitation to Southern California that they have seen since May. Well, as that trough ejects into the Central Plains, this again is in the week two time period. We could be looking at a little bit wetter of a pattern going into that week of Thanksgiving. So we're going to keep a close eye on all of that as we progress forward, but certainly in the near term, things have relaxed a bit. Now, the other thing about the pattern relaxing is where we've sent the cold air. The polar vortex is weakened and it's elongated, but it's meandering and it's shifting around such that the coldest air is going to be setting up basically across Russia, Siberia, over toward Eastern Europe, and even into the Middle East. And that's where the coldest place on Earth is going to be for a little while here. Now, as we continue to play forward here with our forecast, we got to keep a close eye on the North Pacific and the Chukchi Sea. Now, the Chukchi Sea is just north of Alaska, and right now the area is largely ice-free. It's normally covered in ice by this point, but being ice-free is allowing it to really warm up the atmosphere there, promoting more ridging in Alaska, more ridging along the West Coast. You combine it with the warm water in the North Pacific tucked into the Gulf of Alaska, we got a pattern that's hard to break down away from these above-average temperatures out west. So as I tell you the temperatures are moderating, please understand I'm not calling for above average stretch of temperatures for the eastern half of the United States as we plow through the end of November and get into December. Speaking of getting into December, we got to talk about South America. Over the next 15 days, the setup of the monsoon is good enough that they're going to be seeing some additional precipitation more than normal in some of Brazil's major producing areas. It will be drier a bit to the east, but when you get over there into Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, going down toward Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul, that particular stretch could be seeing some beneficial rains, especially in the northern part of that stretch. Now remember, the whole of Brazil, for the most part, started off the season with a drought that was hard to overcome. And given the kind of antics of the Indian Ocean dipole and the lack of either an El Nino or La Nina signal, it took a while to get past that dryness and get a crop planted. But as this crop that was late planted slowly begins to mature, the end of December, then the month of January and early February rainfall will be critical for the success of this first crop beans. But we do know that with the late plant, we will also see a late plant of the safrinha crop. Again, that corn and cotton crop that's coming up. We need to be watching those ocean temperatures on either side of South America very carefully over the coming weeks and months. I look forward to talking to you about it every week here, all right?
Indeed, that's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible, joined us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Commodity Week is coming up next. If you can't stay with us for the full hour, find it online at willag.org.